You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. North Carolina's Senate District 9 covers most of New Hanover County. Republican Michael Lee was appointed to the post in the summer of 2014 after Senator Tom Goolsbee resigned. Senator Lee won the election that fall. 2 years later, he easily won his bid for a second term. As he seeks his third, he faces challengers from the Libertarian and Democratic parties. Senator Michael Lee co-chairs the Senate Education, Higher Education, and Senate Appropriations on Education, Higher Education committees. Other committees on which he's served include Commerce, Insurance, Transportation, Oversight, Judiciary, and State and Local Government. Senator Michael Lee, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much for having me today. I appreciate it.
Today's interview, as a reminder, is pre-recorded. Senator Lee, the majority of this year's Senate campaign seems to be focused on the drinking water supply, on emerging contaminants, and which side isn't or won't not taking care of constituents. You sponsored a bill that eventually became law known as the Water Safety Act. From where you sit, what does this do to ensure the safety of the drinking water supply?
Well, it's a rather broad act. It provides a lot of different things. Number one, it provides with what's essentially been kind of coined as an early warning system. And what it does is it provides water sampling at all the surface water intakes that are out there across the state, not just in our area, and also of the groundwater public municipal supplies or public supplies. And what that does is, as they're testing every quarter, they will be able to test and deliver those results directly to the administration, the legislature, and more importantly to DEQ. So DEQ has the ability of seeing if there are anomalies or something that needs to be investigated or prosecuted. And then from that point, DEQ would then step in, do some of their own sampling for chain of custody reasons, and would be able to find out who the polluter was. That was a really important part of the legislation because, as you know, this has been going on for over 30-some years. And this kind of is a check and balance almost so that we know that someone is actually checking the water every quarter and the results are public. The bill also provided that all industry that discharges into – that has an NPDES permit or they can discharge into the river or surface waters, they've got to provide in a database format a list of all the compounds that they have disclosed and are going to put into that particular river or surface water. The reason that's so important is because right now you can't find that out very easily. What they do is they put it into a permit. They are filed either in paper or PDF, and there are thousands of permits, and you can't really search it. This would enable the CFPUA or any other water treatment facility, if something popped up or there was an anomaly, they could easily search and find out what has been disclosed by what industry as to what was being put into the water source. It gave the express authority to the governor to shut down bad actors, polluters.
And part of the issue that opponents of this legislation have is the notion of giving the governor that power in a separate state statute, because there already is a law that allows the governor through DEQ to shut down any company that he deems polluting too much. And the argument here is having a more specific law on the books that appears to just be targeting Chemours, the more specific law could be favored by a judge if there's a court challenge. And according to the News and Observer, that therefore limits the state's ability to shut down other potential polluters.
I've heard that argument. There's actually a very specific provision in the statute that addresses that, that says that essentially addresses that problem, that it does not in any other way limit any other potential remedy of the state against a bad actor. We ran it through the lawyers within the nonpartisan staff and just about everyone else. So we vetted that pretty clearly. But what we wanted to do is make sure that the governor, whether it's the current governor or a future governor, had that express authority and really felt like they had the ability to act. Certainly there's basic criteria by which the offender would have to just a basic criteria of what they're doing that triggers this authority, but certainly want to make sure that the chief executive of our state has the ability to move quickly.
There is also an argument out there from opponents of this legislation that says industrial lobbyists were able to help essentially craft this bill that would benefit them, and they were given three specific provisions that they asked for. And according to WRAL, Preston Howard, president of the North Carolina Manufacturers Alliance, also a former director of the Division of Water Quality, wrote to state legislators that broader testing of the water supply will, quote, almost assuredly reveal there are many, many chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and other consumer products in those water supplies, end quote. He warned you not to open a Pandora's box. And so you complied with that request?
Not at all. So the bill that I originally introduced was this statewide monitoring system for essentially all emerging compounds. What ended up in the legislation ended up dealing with the PFASs, or it's a family of compounds. Gen X is one of them, and there are over 5,000 of these. So through the legislative process, after I filed my bill, what ended up in the budget is that we had this strong mechanism put in place for monitoring all of our surface water and groundwater, and this would address all the PFASs and essentially set up the infrastructure and framework to do this. As we move forward, once we get a handle on the PFASs and through this monitoring process, they're also looking at a non-targeted analysis at other emerging compounds through this process.
Who is looking at that non-targeted analysis?
The university system is also pulling those samples for non-targeted analysis. And in fact, they were doing it right after the storm and looking at all the different surface water rivers primarily.
Are you talking about the North Carolina Policy Collaboratory?
Actually, the collaboratory really is just the framework for which the funding was provided, and what they do is they send the money out. So Dr. Canapi at NC State, Dr. Ferguson at Duke, I cannot remember the person's name at UNC Chapel Hill. There's also been some funding for toxicology that has come through the policy collaboratory to West ECU. And then there's another grant that's been funded to NC State that's not a part of this. But once we set this framework up, they have the ability to pull these samples, and these samples will be on record in perpetuity so that they can go back and take a look at what they were able to find at a particular point in history in case they needed to. But the legislation that was ultimately passed really dealt with the PFASs and the 5,000 plus number of those compounds.
Right, which was part of the criticism, I think, because it's saying certainly there are plenty of the per- and polyfluoroalkyl compounds in the water, but there are also other classes of chemical compounds that don't fall into that category that are contaminants that are not regulated by the EPA or DEQ at this point. And you're narrowing your focus and saying, let's just not look at those other things?
No, there are some that are regulated and some that are not regulated. Some were in my original bill, the one for dioxane and pharmaceuticals. So what we were doing is we were setting up this network. My original bill had a much more expansive look at things through the legislative process. That did not make it through in the bill. But what we've got now is we've got this infrastructure, a robust infrastructure in place to do this sampling. And then we can expand that in the future, future legislative sessions, once we get our handle on that infrastructure and how we're pulling those samples. You know, I got this idea really in working with Dr. Ferguson at Duke University and looking at the Rhine River monitoring system that they used, which is a limited non-targeted analysis of emerging compounds within the Rhine River. It's multi-jurisdictional with different countries, and that's something that we really need to get to here in North Carolina. Certainly, we don't have multi-jurisdictional issues with the Cape Fear, but we do have them in other river sheds, and we need to be working with South Carolina and other states where we share those river sheds so that we can have this early warning system, not just as to the PFASs, as we've been talking about, but expanding it to all emerging compounds.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Senator Michael Lee, Republican incumbent, seeking his third term in District 9, most of New Hanover County. Today's interview is pre-recorded. And another criticism from your opponents is the mass spectrometer that the legislature reluctantly funded was not the high-resolution tandem liquid chromatography mass spectrometer. It was a lower-end version that only seeks out a particular type of compound. And again, the argument is that it limits the scope of what can be detected. And Gen X, of course, is one of the compounds. And, you know, we've all heard from Dr. Canapi as well that Gen X only makes up a tiny percentage of the contaminants, the contaminant load in the Cape Fear River.
As to equipment and personnel, we did fund millions of dollars to DEQ for that particular purpose so that they could go in and do the targeted testing when an emerging compound was disclosed to them that they needed to go and find and enforce. Again, we've got the statewide monitoring process. It's reported to DEQ. DEQ reviews that, and then they're able to go out and actually take their own samples, as I mentioned a little earlier, use their mass spectrometer and their particular staff. One of the reasons it's important to include the university system is I don't in working with Dr. Canapi and Dr. Ferguson, it's not like you throw a sample into the machine and a light comes on and tells you exactly what it is. A lot of times, because these are emerging compounds, you actually have PhDs that are reviewing them and having to review them at a molecular level to actually figure out what they are and then report that out. So that's why it was great to have the university system. We're lucky in North Carolina because our scientists at State, UNCW, Duke, and others are at the cutting edge of emerging compounds. We have some world-renowned experts here in North Carolina. So while we're not lucky that we're having to deal with this problem, we are lucky that we've got the human capital resources within our university system and in some private institutions like Duke that can really assist us in this particular process. And if you listen to Dr. Ferguson, he had an op-ed in the Star News on Saturday. You know, this is an incredibly robust monitoring system that will be a model for the nation and he says the world. Again, we kind of patterned some of this against the Rhine River example that I gave a little bit earlier, which is a fixed permanent monitoring process. And hopefully we're going to get to that process as time goes on in North Carolina as well.
Looking at education in the state, of course, we know that North Carolina is still struggling in terms of being able to attract and keep high quality teachers. It's moved up a little bit. Certainly there's been a bump in teacher pay. But it's still not in the top half of the country. I mean, it's still sitting near the bottom in terms of the 50 states and how appealing North Carolina is. As chair of the Senate Education and Higher Education Committee, what do you think needs to happen at this point? Is this just a question of funding?
It's not just a question of funding, but historically, if we look at it, as we were leading up the 4 years or 5 years previous to 2011 or 12, we went through the downturn, and what you saw at that time was there was no savings reserve for our state. I think it was under $180 million at that time. And you saw that per pupil funding actually decreased for four straight years leading into 2011 to be right at the bottom. You also saw teacher salaries essentially frozen for that period of time with the exception of some longevity pay. So what we have been trying to do since 2014 is we've had five consecutive teacher pay increases, so we can kind of catch up, and I think we've moved 10 spots up in the national rankings in that regard. Billions of dollars have gone into per pupil funding, but it's really not just about how much money we spend, although that's an important component. Let's just take I introduced a piece of legislation called the Renewal School District, and what that did was it gave a school district with a certain number of restart schools the ability to treat their whole district, in essence, much like a charter school, so that teachers could have more control over what was going on in the classroom from a curriculum perspective. Principals and assistant principals had more control over the management of their individual schools and school populations, and they would get the training to be able to do those things. I think that, and that's just one what I would call a small example, innovation has got to also be patterned against funding. All the money in the world won't fix the problems. We've got to start doing things differently than we always have. If you look at classrooms today, they're not a whole lot different than when my mom was in a classroom. We've got some technological advances, but we've really got to be innovative in that regard. We're starting to work on the student funding piece or how the state funds education in North Carolina. Right now, North Carolina as a state, I think we're top 10 in how much we spend per capita. But where we're finding a shortfall is that with our local governments, that's where we're kind of really moving down the scale. So we are working at the state level to find out, okay, how can we fix some of those problems? The Constitution puts that responsibility on the state, and the state legislature really needs to be the one to step up and do that through not just funding, but innovative programs.
Gerrymandering. Recently, a court ruled that the most recent maps for the congressional redistricting plan made to ensure that states remain Republican, those districts. Is there any appetite for a nonpartisan process?
I think there is. And you know, as we move away from, you know, 100 years of one-party control, and now Republicans have been in control of the legislature, I do think that we are looking for ways to find out how can you establish a truly nonpartisan commission. There are some other states that are doing that, and we're looking at seeing at kind of what they're
You're
doing.
You're looking at it.
Looking at it.
We're just about out of time. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interview. Senator Michael Lee, thanks for sharing your views with us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.